This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason here. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Dr. John Hansen from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, Center for Sales Leadership. He's done a whole bunch. He's worked at some schools. Make sure to check out part one or the show notes to read his full bio. Dr. John, are you ready for a conversation about persuasion and sales processes?
I sure am.
So for people tuning in right now, make sure to check out part one because it segues perfectly into this. We were talking about authenticity and, you know, your experience in sales, which sounds like you had a really good experience, right? It sounds like it wasn't just a classic, like, here's the product, go sell it. Who cares what happens? More of the relational, the customer experience, sales experience side. And then obviously that leads into what you're teaching and what you have for the research. And then we started talking about sales process and you brought up something funny, which is like this, you know, their sales was lost and or needed something. You said, okay, people started using spin selling. And I hear that a lot where that's kind of like the go-to guide for a lot of universities where they teach that. Here's what we do. And kind of shifting from product to process-based sales processes. With the product-focused training or what you see out there, like, where is that coming from? Like, just the perpetual, like, I have this product, we're amazing, I just want to talk about this product mode. Like, why does that keep happening or where does that come from?
I think there's two things. The first is, and we hear this a lot as we're dealing with companies in our area and we assist them with training. We call it executive education, but we train a lot of what I would call mid-sized companies that aren't large enough to have their own formalized training system, but aren't small enough such that they can handle training in a one-off type setting. And, you know, the first thing we hear and the number one ask we get is, can you help us transition our sales force? We have an established sales force that's been selling a certain way for a long time. We have folks in the role that have been there 20, 25 years, and they have grown accustomed to pitching products and negotiating price. And we really want them to move away from that such that they're selling value and quantifying the value they're providing their customers, in part the value they as salespeople provide. But the thing we hear time and again is we just cannot get them to buy in. We cannot get them to change. They are so rooted in the way they've always done things, which the first thing I always say to them is a singular training session is not going to change this. In fact, Jason, there was a really interesting study. It was done, this is 10 years ago, at least now. It was actually conducted in Europe, but they were looking at companies that were trying to enact that very same transition. And what they found in that study was that for all the companies who were trying to do it, 80% of them ultimately had to revert to a fire and rehire type approach. That's all they could do. They could not get their old dogs to learn new tricks. So I'd say that's number one. And we hear that all the time. And, you know, I think it's easy to say, well, that's a negative against those older salespeople, the people who've been in the roles for a long time. I just think it's what they've come from. And it's hard to break those habits. The second thing I hear is this, and this is for the younger salespeople who are coming back and talking to me, and they'll come in and they'll say, I'll say, how's it going? And they'll say, well, Dr. Hansen, I really enjoy the job. I've been out, let's say 3 years, hypothetically, trying to decide where I go now, if I go into sales management or if I'm going to get promoted or what's going to happen. And I'll ask, what challenges are you facing? And it's interesting. More times than not, the challenges they speak of are self-inflicted in that it's things their company does they have to overcome, more so than challenges presented to them by the customer. And the other thing I hear quite frequently is, well, you know, that customer orientation thing we talked about in class was really nice, but the thing I'm running up against in my company is they push me hard to sell certain products that are more profitable for us. And it puts me in a quandary in terms of doing what I think is right for the customer doing versus doing what the company wants me to do, which obviously separate conversation suggests there's a disconnect between top level leadership and the sales force. But that happens more than you would think. I hear that quite frequently. And I think those, and just imagine, if you will, you've got this student who's come out of a sales program and you get, I think, good training in the sales program and they preach to customer orientation and adaptation and being sensitive to buyers. then they step into a role and their company's saying, sell this. I mean, and that's product first. So I think those two things, salespeople who came up in a different time and have habits that are difficult to break, and organizations that have a disconnect from the top in terms of leadership from a sales perspective, have led us to where the issue's still there. It still exists.
Yeah. And I think that's always the case in any group. It's, you know, leadership sets the tone and the direction, and it's always from the top down, right? The negative side of that is the fish stinks from the head down, right? Which mm-hmm. is like, if there's an issue with the team, where is that coming from? It's coming from somewhere. And it's really unfortunate to hear that kind of product focus, sell this because it's more profitable. Who cares, you know, what might be better for that customer, but sell this. I haven't experienced that myself as a consultant, but it feels like that from a customer perspective, you know, B2C yep. or B2B. And again, I think that's what gives sales a negative connotation, which is I have my priority and I have my focus, and I have my needs and wants, and I kind of don't care about yours. Back to the fire and restart mode, which is where a change is occurring, you know, and I've seen that many times from my side as well, which is we're shifting. We want to change the way that things are being sold, or a pricing needs to change, or just anything. And then people won't change. Is there any other stop versus fire and restart with a brand new generation of people who don't know any better? Or is the research and or your experience just say, like, at a certain point, that's the only option?
Well, that's a good question. I have yet to see a strong stream of research on, you know, what I would almost call a recalibration, because I don't think the word is just training when you get to something like this. It's a total reset in the organization. I do think there may be some things we could learn from the change management literature, where you're truly enacting a change here as opposed to just a different training approach. So I wish I had a better answer for that. I don't know. I'll say what I said. I think you would agree with me. A singular training session is not going to get it done. It has to be a cultural recalibration, such that everybody is buying in. And the other thing is, everything has to be in place. I mean, for example, if you think you're just going to talk about the importance and the virtue of being customer oriented, but you have a sales force that's working on nothing but commissions, and as such, they are just, you know, they are really focused on what's in it for them and not necessarily the customer. It's everything has to be aligned for that type of change to work.
Makes sense. And definitely what I've seen and agree to. So with the process, right? Because we were talking about spin selling and kind of like shifting from product to process, but then people getting too married on their process or too focused on their process. Like, what have you found, especially under this value selling, but like, what's the ideal process or processes, or how do you balance that like process focus? Because you have to have a playbook.
Let me just say that when I don't mean to suggest that you don't need process. You absolutely need processes, because you have to systematize selling. It has to be formalized in the organization. You can't just have a bunch of salespeople out there doing their own one-off thing. It doesn't work unless you just have a team of superstars, and nobody does. Nobody has a team of superstars such that you don't need training. You have to have a playbook. I think what you would want to do is develop a process that allows for flexibility to the customer, and train and develop your salespeople such that they know when they need to pivot within the process. Still, you know, working within a process, but understanding that there's flexibility that needs to be built into the process and adaptability to customer needs. And I'll just give you a simple example. If your customer, when you walk in and you're wanting to walk him or her through spin, and I don't mean to, There's a lot of power in spin, just from a questioning perspective, but understanding the importance of what matters to the customer. But if you go in with the idea that I'm going to take them through spin, and they present to you a clearly articulated and well thought out issue that they are confronting, and they show you that they understand everything you're going to ask them about, pivot within your process and talk about how your solution could seamlessly fit into their organizational processes and therefore provide value. And again, I'm dealing with younger salespeople, And I'm sure there are some more experienced salespeople out there that would say, of course you have to adapt and pivot within the process, but it's a little more challenging than you think, especially as you're dealing with salespeople who are still developing. And I think, Jason, this is for organizations, this is a tough one because you have to have those processes. You can't just do this on an ad hoc basis. But I think any manager out there would probably say, of course, I want my salespeople to be flexible and I want them to adapt to customer needs and such. I've talked to some buyers that would suggest in those conversations, what I have heard is sellers are still hesitant to do this. They are clinging to that process. And in some instances, that causes them to seemingly gloss over what I'm saying to them. And that's very frustrating.
Do you think that comes from a lack of confidence or this imposed feeling from management that here is our process, follow our process?
I think it's both of those things simultaneously, in that when you don't have the confidence yet, and I will be the first to tell you that most younger developing salespeople, if they're going to be honest with you, they're going to tell you, I'm not yet there from a confidence perspective. This job's hard. And I think when you're struggling with your confidence, you are more apt to say, the one thing I am going to do is lean into everything my company is providing me from a process perspective. I'm just going to do exactly what they say. Now, as you evolve and you become successful and you post results, confidence comes with it. I mean, it's confidence and results are obviously correlated. And I think with that, salespeople become much more comfortable deviating. Like, I know how to do this. I'm comfortable moving away from processes imposed. And you would certainly hope that a manager would be adept enough to recognize, hey, Joe over here, I'm very comfortable with him doing what he does. You know, we still have a framework. He can't just completely lose track of what we try to do as an organization. But I understand that he has earned the right to have more flexibility in this. You want your younger salespeople to have that flexibility, but with that lack of confidence, I think they really grip tight to the process you provide for them. They're like, I've got to do this, and I got to do this, and I got to do this. Because in that, they see a path to success, and they desperately want to be successful. And I think for some of them, the notion that I'm going to deviate and I'm going to go this on my own, it scares them. It makes them nervous. So I think those two things contribute to the fact that at times salespeople hold on to the process a bit more than they should. And it's quite honestly, it's probably easier just to go in and sell and say, you know, I've got a process and I'm going to stick to it, as opposed to, I don't know where this conversation may go, but I'm going to adapt based on what my buyer is telling me in this case. That's a little more daunting, especially as you're a newer, younger salesperson.
In the research and or the executive training coaching that you do with companies, you know, outside the university, do you see that level of manager where they understand that salespeople will have multiple processes and they give them the flexibility and they coach and manage that? Or do you see them going, well, this is what I did and this is what everyone should do because this is what I did?
I think with many of the organizations we work with that are, again, not the, you know, large sales organizations, and in some instances have salespeople who have stepped into managerial roles for whatever reason, sometimes because they were successful in sales, which is not the reason to put them in a manager role. They are more apt to hold on to that process. They want their people to stick to the process. Because even as a manager, you can say, well, you know, they're engaging in the process. They're doing what they're supposed to do. So I see sales managers holding tightly to processes that I think at times can constrict buyers in terms of what they want to do in terms of interactions with salespeople.
Got it. And that makes sense. I mean, it's not a standard rule. It's not always the case. But when a manager gets thrown into it, maybe without any training or leadership awareness, they just want to make everyone do what they did because it worked for them. And then what was that process? Either a specific one or a fly by the seat of your pants, kind of like, hey, just get in there and do this from a sales perspective. So when we talk about sales process, let's flip to the other side, which is the buyer part, right? We talked about authenticity. It kind of led into the sales process part in part one of our conversation. But, you know, what is that process that buyers really want? And I know that you had mentioned they want to be sold or helped the way that they want to be helped. And they don't want you to just come in and just blindly, you know, go through your process if they're a good buyer. But even the not so good buyers, or, you know, the non-professional buyers, like, what are they looking for from a persuasion process, and or what gets in their way of not moving forward?
Well, I think they still want knowledge. And sometimes I think your best buyers recognize this. While, you know, you have a buyer who has a range of issues he may be or she may be purchasing for, it is challenging for them to be an absolute expert on every one of those issues they may be purchasing from. So I still think if you're a salesperson and you come in and you say, I want to provide some knowledge with respect to what's happening externally here, how our field is moving and such. And maybe that's not, you know, I don't necessarily need you to tell me about your business, but I'm going to educate you a bit on what's happening in the grander scheme of things as it relates to this solution and such. And to me, that's the more consultative approach, because when you come in as and you take a consultative approach, but you're really just focused on, I'm going to consult with you on how my solution fits into your business. I think most buyers are going to say, I know my business and I know I have a pretty good idea of how I think your solution is going to fit in. If you can help me understand the larger view of this, I think there's value in that. I still, Jason, think buyers, especially the adept ones, they want knowledge. They want expertise. They want that from their salespeople. Now, at the same time, they want a salesperson, I keep coming back to this, who can clearly articulate how their solution is going to fit into the buyer's business and how there's going to be value provided by how that solution will seamlessly integrate into processes underlying the business. But I do still think there's value. I know there's value in a highly competent salesperson who can come in and not only talk about that, but also talk about this larger picture that exists out there and bring things to the table that perhaps the buyer isn't aware of. It's, you know, I like to give buyers a lot of credit, but it's hard to find a buyer who knows everything he or she needs to know about, you know, that given issue.
Well, and when they do, right, if you do happen across somebody who is so aware and so knowledgeable and has the wisdom to know, you know, they have a square peg problem and you have a square peg solution, those ones are just so easy. They probably don't even make a blip on the sales radar, right? Like, that person's, yeah, like, here's what I need. I want this. Like, stop, you know, and I've been that buyer at times where it's like, no, I don't want to go through your slide. I need to do a demo. No, you don't. Just tell me how to order this. How do I sign up? I'm ready to go. And then show me a couple of features. Like, I don't need to sit through your 45-minute slide deck because I know what I need at that point in the conversation. It's all the other ones, right, that you're referring to.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's the buyers who need the information. And I think skilled salespeople are going to be able to figure out where there are gaps in knowledge, and they're going to be able to provide that knowledge. And hopefully the buyer sees value in that. And to me, that's where the value added selling comes from. But there is this notion of, you've got to be able to read your buyer and adapt to where your buyer's at. And, let them buy how they want to buy. And that's a scary proposition, especially for some of the younger salespeople I see as they're going out into the field, because it's much easier. And there's organizational tension, because you have to implement processes on the sales side, and managing that tension can be hard for, as we were saying earlier, sales managers, particularly if they're not experienced.
Yeah. And it is tough, right? Like you said early on, you don't need processes, defined structure, playbooks, if you have a bunch of superstars and you just let them do what they do. But that's not a thing. Like, that doesn't happen. Doesn't happen in professional sports where you're just like, hey, we've got a basketball team, I got 12 superstars, and just let them do whatever. And the coaches just sit down and watch the game like everyone else. Like, that's not how any level of anything works. Because there's still, got to have some process structure. You know, something has to happen, because otherwise, left to their own devices, people will just do what's in their best interest versus what's maybe in the company's best interest. Yeah. So you got to have that balance where you have something to manage to and hold expectations to and train to and reset people to, but then the flexibility, because, you know, you're dealing with humans and humans are unpredictable.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. That's very, well, very challenging for sales managers.
It is so difficult. And then, you know, when you do that at scale, when you have a lot of salespeople and then, you know, it's various sales cycles, then it gets even more challenging. So there's a bunch I want to ask you, which we're going to put into the future of sales, because one of the things we talked about before jumping on the recording was talking about ambidextrous salespeople and mental health. And I think that's a great subject for future of sales. It could be sales process, but we'll put it in there. Dr. John, I know that if people want to connect with you, they can do it on LinkedIn, so they can find you there. John Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. Also the UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, professional sales sites. Both of the links will be in the show notes for people who want to find that and read your bio and find out more information about you and the program and what you're doing for sales and the research and for students, for corporate partners who want to be involved, all of that. And I'm super excited for the future of sales conversation. Dr. John, thanks for being here and sharing so much about persuasion and the sales process.
Great. Thank you, Jason.
And for everyone tuning in, as always, I appreciate you being here, because when we talk about the sales process and what he was just referring to, it's really making that shift away from product focus. I have this product, I'm trying to sell this thing, and this is what I'm measured to, or this is what I get paid to what can I help you with? What do you need? And is there an intersection? And I think that really does a lot to shift the dirty word part of sales away from how it feels as a customer to what it could feel like and what people truly want from a sales professional, like Dr. John mentioned in the first part. And I think that's so important. And I appreciate you being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.